precise definition of what Kedusha is, what constitutes Kedusha. So when the Pasuk says Kedusha to you, you have to know precisely what it means. So first of all, Kedusha to you, you see, is a chiyuv. It's not just a statement. Latem to you, lumam lachas kohen and v'goy kadosh. Is a fact. So that means that automatically you will be considered a separate nation. So what does that mean? What does Kadosh mean over there? Over there, Kadosh means that that they'll be differentiated from the rest of the people through Kabbalah and Mitzvahs, right? But over here it says, over here is a separate chiyuv, kedoshim to you. You see? The question is, what precisely does it mean? What does it mean kedoshim to you? What does kedoshim to you mean? Here. Evi prushim min harayis umin havera. Okay? Shekom mokam shatam moitze gede erva tam moitze kedusha. Isha zona vachalolo ani ad Hashem ekadishcha. Lo yecha al zara ani ad Hashem ekadishcha. Alright, that's Rashi, huh? Okay. Reprush min harayis and min havera. What's the min havera? In Rashi essentially means it should be min harayis. What does it mean min havera? And what does it mean reprush min harayis? If you have already all the whole parsha of Arias before, the whole parsha of Arias before, so of course if you don't have to mention that with Prushim and Arias, if you have all parsha of Arias before, you just said you should be parsha from the Arias. You know what I mean? And then according to Rashi, that's what we have to say. Purushim in Harayas in Avera is not just that you don't violate the Suri Erva, but there is a positive state that emerges from a person not being over the Avera of Arayas. It's a certain positive state, according to Rashi. So what does Rashi mean, umin ha'avera? A simple case. Let's say, for instance, a person simply did not violate the Yisuri Arayis. It was in a situation where he couldn't violate the Yisuri Arayis. Right. So then, he wouldn't violate any of the lavin with regard to the Arayis. However, to be a parish min harayis, that state he would not achieve. That state he would not achieve. Ed, when he hears the word min havera, what does min havera mean? Exactly. Yeah, the mitzvah of kedoshim to you means that a person should have a certain state of mind. A certain state of mind with regard to how his energy is expended. That's what it means. Even if a person would keep the Yisurim, still in all, it's possible that he should not, that he would not be Mekayim, the Chiyuv of Kedoshim Tiyu. Kedoshim Tiyu means that there's a certain way that he discharges his energy. There's a different structure in the in how his psychic energy is dispensed. It's a different structure in how in the way that his psychic energy operates. Yeah.
Participation.
Precisely is this thing that Kedoshim Tiyu, Purushim and Arayas. What precisely is the Purushim and Arayas? What constitutes Purushim and Arayas? Okay, certain state of mind. Fine. Well, how would you define that state? Kadosh ani er Hashem Elokecha. What does that mean? Kadosh ani er Hashem Elokecha. How does that apply to God? circulation too. This seems to be a very important mitzvah. Like Rashi says before, Malam Eich and Nemra Parshazu Bahakel Nesherov Gufe Torah Tlimba. Circulation to you is an introduction to the Parsha that has the Rov Gufe Torah. So there must be some very basic concept in Kedoshim to you. Basic principle of Yadis. Yeah, the thing is like this. So you have to understand a little bit about how the soul works and what exactly the soul is. The thing is like this. Let us say for instance a person. The old question is a person, for instance, the old question is like this, that if a person, a man is a physician, right? He's a doctor. The doctor has to use certain tools. Are the tools the doctor? No, because if he uses the tool, then it's he using the tool, right? So the tool is not him. Isn't that true? Because if the tool is him, he can't... He can't be using an object which is he. He has to be something else. Something other than the tool itself, right? But a person uses his hand. A physician uses his hand also. So apparently the hand isn't him either. Right? That's right. Because if he is the hand, then he can't use the hand. It would be a logical contradiction. Say a man uses his hand for a very good reason. Because recognize that the essence of a man is not his hand. It's very simple. And if he lost his hand, his essence is still there. So that's why we say if a person didn't have a hand, you wouldn't look at him as a less of a human being. Because you recognize that essentially he's the same as anybody else.
Unless he uses his mind.
A person uses his mind, so you'll say that same question. So his mind can't be his essence. Because since he uses his brain, you see people commonly say, why don't you use your mind? Right? Which means that it is within his power to use an extraneous thing, which is mind. So that means that can't be him. So the question is, what is me? You'll say, it's your emotions. Well, people say, control your emotions. Control yourself.
Well, they say control yourself, right?
What? Self shows that the people really consider the emotions the essence. That's true. But people can say control your emotions also. So since you can say control your emotions, apparently it's possible to perceive that there's something beyond the emotions.
You control yourself.
It's basically an impossibility. Control yourself is an impossibility.
Yeah, that's true.
You cannot control yourself. It's an impossibility. What it means is a certain part which people perceive as essential. Okay. But at any rate, the question still remains. What is, or where is you? That's the question. What the contradiction is in a person saying that he's taking off a year to find himself. How could he find himself? It's an impossibility. If he's doing the finding, then what is he finding? Who's being found? The person is definitely lost. It's simply impossible for something to be a doer and the thing done to at the same time. Because that thing which is doing, which is acting, cannot be the same as the thing which is being acted upon. It's a very simple thing. If the thing which is acting is the same as the thing which is being acted upon, then what is it acting on? It's logically impossible. That's what I want you to understand. It's a logical impossibility. Okay?
But don't put
the object and the subject at the same time.
Right.
It's basic grammar. Every sentence has a subject and a predicate. And you can't have the predicate and the subject being the same thing. Same question, basically. Okay. You have to say The question itself, many times if you look at a question, the question itself contains the answer. This question contains the answer. Because you have to say that there is something, when you keep going back, that there is something which is what we would call the prime mover of this individual. If a person can use his mind, that must mean there is something that uses the mind. There is something basic. There's something at the base over there that is the prime mover of the whole system. Now, obviously, when you say you, what you mean is that thing which is the prime mover. That is the you. That thing which is the prime mover. Okay? Now, the mind is not necessarily the prime mover, because a person can use his mind. So there must be something else which initiates the process of using the mind. See? That thing, that prime mover, is the soul. That is the soul of man. Say there is a prime mover of the soul, we can have a very interesting phenomena. What is the phenomena? Phenomena is that a person can change his soul. Can change souls. How would that work? I'll give you an example. Let us... Possible in the following manner. Let us say a person is a very irascible individual. It means he's high strung. And he's always... And he functions under the influence of... The emotion of
anger
or hatred, let's say. Now, it comes out that when, under certain situations, this hatred takes hold of him, and he'll do everything in order to satisfy this hatred or this anger. Right? Now, that means that at that moment, his mind, his emotions, his physical body are completely under the sway of this emotion. Isn't that true? What then is the prime mover at that moment? What then is the prime mover at that moment? In that person's soul? The hatred is the prime mover.
Isn't that part of the soul, though?
One second. It comes out that the prime mover can change. The prime mover can change. Let us say, for instance, a person... Now, it's true that a person is under... It would seem that a person is changing under different... is under the sway of different emotions. That's true. That's true. But let's analyze one emotion. Let's say, for instance, a person who's under the total domination of the emotion of hatred, let's say. And that's the prime mover. He's using his mind, his every fiber in his body is being used to satisfy that emotion. Okay? So that's the prime mover. That is, if that's the prime mover, that's the essence of the soul, right? Now let's say a person would tell him, just a second, why don't you look at this rationally and analyze this? Does it make any sense the way you're living to have this hatred and to feel this way about this person? You maintain this person is wicked. It's true. Do you hate every wicked person in the world? And the person starts realizing that it's not rational, it doesn't make any sense. Suddenly it's possible that the hatred should abate, be gone, completely. It is possible that the person will recognize that what he's doing is foolish, and he will say to himself that this emotion, which was really in control of my life, doesn't make any sense. And you can abandon it. It's possible. Things like that happen. What? What happens at that point is there's been a change in the prime mover. Because originally the prime mover was this emotion. And now there is a change. So it comes out that his soul has changed. Since we define the soul as the prime mover, it'll come out his soul has changed from one soul to another soul. It's an amazing phenomenon, because the prime mover is the soul. When we say to a person, you, we're referring to his prime mover.
So what
is it that's causing? Just the same thing. I want you to understand something. Just because a person undergoes varied emotions doesn't mean he has many prime movers. All those varied emotions, if you really would have knowledge of him, you'd find that they really have one source. And you could trace them back. So the study of the personality shows that there's a certain setup of the psyche which is really responsible for all the person's actions. And if you understood that the structure of his mind, you'd know what he would do at different times. So don't think just because there are different emotions like love, hatred, anger, happiness, whatever, enjoyment, pleasure, all these different emotions, that the soul keeps changing every 2 minutes. That's not true. That's just on the surface it keeps changing. But the truth of the matter is that every person has a nature. And if you get down to the bottom of his nature, you'll understand why he acts a certain way at certain times. Okay. Now, since, however, it is possible for a person to change his nature. So what happens really is that when he changes his nature, his soul changes. That's why really, when we talk about like a great person like the Rambam, you cannot really try to imagine the way the Rambam felt about things that we feel. The Rambam's soul was a different soul. Different prime mover. Different prime mover. You can't draw an analogy between the two. Because as a person progresses and becomes a greater person, the soul keeps changing. The prime mover keeps changing. It's a different prime mover. See? Whereas a person, you might find, let's say if we trace the person from early youth, progresses. You find in his early youth how important certain emotional situations could be to him. Later, as he progresses, these things don't even affect him anymore, because he's interested in something else. Now, how is the process of change take place? It's an interesting thing. But there is a tremendous battle that takes place between two forces in a person. His mind and his emotions. His mind and his emotions. And the question, of course, is, it's a phenomenon, a human phenomenon.
That a person. Emotions as a soul?
No. I'll get back to that. Just saying that a person many times recognizes that he's not living according to the way he understands he should be living. And most people, during their lives, have this experience. They recognize that they're not living, and they say, "What? I shouldn't be doing this. Not living the way that their mind tells them to." So there's a conflict between their mind and the emotions. You see? Now, which of the two is stronger? That's an age-old question. The mind or the emotions? Which of the two is stronger? I say like this. I say that...
What?
Is that with regard to the we see an interesting phenomenon. You see the phenomenon that there was one philosopher that maintained that everything a person does wrong is because of a lack of knowledge. Lack of knowledge. If a person had total knowledge, he'd never make a mistake. So they ask him, they say, yes, but how about a person that has knowledge that drinking is bad for him, and nevertheless he continues to be a drunkard? You know, so what is the you see he has knowledge. Right? So he answered, he said that at the time that he's about to take that drink, he is convinced that the drink is good for him. So you see that the knowledge is the, he lost his knowledge. He lost the knowledge. Now why did he lose the knowledge? It's a question. But the fact is that knowledge is really the prime mover. Right? Knowledge is the most powerful thing. So you see from this mental experiment, you could see that it's an interesting thing. It would seem that the soul cannot possibly do something without thinking at the time that it's good, See? So therefore, if it could retain its knowledge, it would not do it. It would not be able to do it. It could absolutely retain its knowledge, it would not be able to do it. But you see also that there is something else which comes into the picture and can overpower the knowledge. Right? So on the one hand, the soul cannot function without what we would call some type of knowledge. Right? It would have to distort and think that this is knowledge at the time. Right? And on the other hand, however, you see that the emotion is so powerful that it can distort the knowledge. So it would seem that the emotion is superior. Right? However, the answer really is, I would say, that it depends. Doesn't the emotion has a tremendous force. There's no question about that. And in terms of if you'd have at the same time both knowledge versus emotion at the same time, the emotion would win. But the mind has the ability to, maybe not at the time, but the mind has the ability to relive, because of the fact that the mind has memory traces, to relive and to analyze. And ultimately, when the mind analyzes and understands why a person did things, really has true knowledge of the causes of certain things, then the emotion loses. Then the emotion does lose. See, the problem with that mental experiment is that the person does not understand, does not have knowledge of precisely why he drinks. See? He may have knowledge that drinking is bad for him, but he doesn't really have knowledge concerning the self. If he would have knowledge concerning the self, he would be able to undo the emotion. See, that is the mistake. The mistake is that the mental experiment is always expressed in terms of knowledge of knowledge of the action itself, whether it's good or bad. That's true. He may have knowledge that it's bad. His knowledge that it's bad may really be complete. But he doesn't have any knowledge as to why he is doing it, you see. However, had he had knowledge as to why he is doing it, you see, then he would be able to overcome the emotion. So actually, the answer to the question, which is greater, the knowledge or the emotion, the mind or the emotion, I would say that it depends. The emotion can prevent the mind from functioning. There's no question. It can cripple the mind. The emotion can cripple the mind. And at the time, the mind can't pull itself together. However, the mind has the advantage of being around when the emotion subsides. Emotions are just don't really always stay at the same height constantly. Emotions subside. When they subside, then the mind can operate. And the mind at that time can discover what the cause and what lies, why the emotion has that effect. By doing that, by that process, the mind can overcome the emotion. So, and one thing, with regard to the mind, once the mind really has a grasp and understands and overcomes the emotion, see, then the emotion is lost. Then the emotion is lost. But nevertheless, so in the long run, the mind really has greater power. In the short run, the emotion has a much greater power. That's the difference between the two. Yes. There is a certain amount that the mind, this is a separate thing, but with regard to what we were discussing before, there's a quantitative factor as to how much the mind can be fooled. If a person had poison in front of him, I mean, a normal person wouldn't be able to tell himself this is good. See? It seems one of the big things, one of the big factors with regard to fooling the mind is time, distance. If it's a long run, if it's something, if it's a pain, that is not... In the immediate, the person has tremendous ability to fool himself. See, what's the difference between a person that's in death row, awaiting execution, and between any one of us? We all know we're going to die one day. Why is this person in a different state of mind than we are? You see? What's the answer? The answer is because since we imagine it's far away, we could deny the reality of our death. Now, this person can't because it's very close. See? Same reason that old people. their personalities change. Why do old people's personalities change? Because the older they get, the less they can deny the reality of their imminent departure. You see, that's what happens. So it changes. It has an effect on the personality. Distance is a big thing. Distance is a big thing. Mechanism through which the mind can be fooled. A soul has an underlying attachment to something. All the reactions of the soul are based on its attachment to something. And philosophers break it up into three categories. They say it's love of money, love of honor, or love of wisdom. One of the three. It's true. There are very few people that really love money. Most people love honor. And the only way they can get honor is through money. And the reason why they can get honor through money is because other people love money. But somebody has to love money, otherwise they can get honor. Poor man, the poor man loves money. The wealthy man has already seen how little money can do for him. But he's seen that it's given him a lot of honor. So he loves the honor. Some philosophers say that honor is a higher level than money.
I presume wisdom is the highest level.
Money. Well, the argument is as follows, that every person, contrary to, is born with the same apparatus. So we all experience physical pleasures. We all know what the physical pleasures are like, because we all have the same physical nature, right? Now, a person who the physical nature, by definition, shows you that that there's an enjoyment of food, an enjoyment of the physical. So that everybody knows. Now we see that when a person gets into the upper echelons of society, if he's successful, makes a success out of himself, he'll find that he converts his physical pleasures for honor. See this guy, who was it, the last guy just gave millions of dollars to run for his campaign over there?
Lerman,
Lou Lerman. Important thing, honor's the most important thing. Yeah. Kennedy didn't need any more money, but he needs a lot of honor. That's what he's lacking. This is what he's missing. What is he missing? What was Rockefeller missing? It's honor that's more important than money. For say that since you see that a person, if he's in the position, will choose honor over the tithes, so you must say that it is a superior, why should we say we're different than them? It's a superior type of enjoyment, and the only reason that the average man doesn't choose it is because it's not available to him. He's never experienced it. But put him in the same position, he too. We'll run after the honor. Explain the phenomena, common phenomena, where that people always say, they look at a wealthy guy, and they always say, if I had his money, I would stay home all day, I'd go all over the world, I'd be on vacation, I'd be scuba diving, I'd be doing this and that. Why aren't they doing these things? The answer? The answer is because you now don't perceive what the enjoyment of honor is at this level. If you had the money and you experienced the honor, you would say, hey, this is it. Honor, you have to stay in business for honor. You pack, you close up your business, and you go away to an island to enjoy yourself. Not too much honor around. So that's the difference. Everybody thinks they're different. That's another fantasy. So therefore, they don't believe it. Just tell them, oh, yeah. Tell them he did something great. The guy will be overwhelmed. Salesmanship. All salesmanship is based on honor. Why? Because what is a good salesman? A good salesman is a person that can fool somebody into what salesmanship is. It's a con game. So how do you fool a person? You can't really, people aren't stupid. Let me put it this way, a salesman's no brighter than the guy that he's trying to sell to. So how do you fool a guy? How does he fool a guy? You see? He can't fool him by the facts. But he can fool him, everybody knows, by flattery. Flattering him, getting on his good side. That's the way
you... Take him out.
And now how do you flatter a person? Why can you fool a person when you flatter him? Because there's one area that the person wants to be fooled. And that is with regard to his own self-importance. Now there you could lie to him and tell him all kinds of crazy things. Because it can't be obvious. You can't make it obvious because then he says, hey, he's just trying to get it. But you can go pretty far before it becomes obvious. See? Compliment the person. See? Why will the person believe the most absurd compliments about himself? Because he really believes it underneath. He believes that this is all true. Or at least it should be true. See? To him it is true. That's the base of self-esteem. Yeah, if a person's ripped off, he feels like he was a fool. He was a fool.
Yeah.
You have knowledge. If you lie to a person, why is a person upset? He's not so upset about the fact that you told him was wrong. He's upset that you didn't have any respect for him. You robbed him. You consider him a fool. See, it's what you consider him that bothers him, not the fact that he believed. You see. That's why I say, one time I said, Pshat, the Ramban's Kasha, where it says by Avram said to Avimelech, so he said, V'gam omno, achosi bas ovihi achlo bas imi, v'tehili l'isha. So Avimelech asked Avram, he said, why don't you tell me, this is your wife? Tell me a lie, it's your sister. So he says, no, he says, gam omno, achosi bas ovihi achlo bas imi. So the Ramban says, eini yadea, ma'o asnatzlas azeh? What kind of answer is this? She happens to be also, she's your wife, who cares she's related to you? What's this v'gam omna? So Ramban doesn't answer. I said, pshat is that the pshat is like this, that when you lie to somebody, there's two things. First of all, you're giving him a false information, so you're causing him to act on false information. That's bad. But there's something else. Lying to somebody, you take away from his dignity. You show him that he's not important. You don't consider him important enough to tell him the truth. So it really is a disparaging type of thing. You're degrading him by telling him a lie. So that's what Avram said. He said, with regard to telling you something that's false, in order and basing your action on that, that I couldn't help because no choice, because I thought they're going to kill me. But I want you to know, I wouldn't tell you a total lie. I didn't really lie to you. In fact, is true that she's my sister. So that took away from the degradation, his lack of consideration. A person, when you lie to somebody, it's not just that the person's upset because of the fact that he has misinformation. But how could you? It's an insult to my intelligence. How could you insult me by telling me a false thing? He said, that I didn't do. I didn't, they should know that there is some truth there. And since it is true in fact, so I didn't lie to you. That made Avimelech feel better. Honor is really, honor is an important thing. Okay. That's why the philosophers, the argument continues that those who, there are many people who have experienced physical pleasures as well as honor. But there aren't too many people who have experienced the enjoyment of knowledge. Not too many people have experienced it. Okay? Most people don't know that knowledge could be an enjoyable experience. And you see among those people who have experienced the enjoyment of knowledge, they are philosophers. They become philosophers. Those people choose to give up the honor and the money. So you see that that is really the greatest enjoyment. That's the argument. Love of money, what we mean is money really is concentrated taiva, you might say. Okay. Yes, what happens with an emotion, getting back to what we said before, what happens with an emotion is that the soul, this underlying part, has the capacity to have something become attached to it, to join it, and become a part of it, so that it becomes a part of the very prime mover. That becomes the very prime mover itself. That's the nature of the soul. You see, it's an interesting thing. That there is something that has the nature that it will become akin to that which becomes attached to it. And that which becomes attached to it will actually be a part of that thing. That's the nature of the soul. That's why the Chachamim speak in terms of the poisoning of the soul. Soul is poisoned. What does it mean the soul is poisoned? It means that the soul itself already has become part of that which it's taken in. Now you see Chazal hold, the Rambam says, especially that a person can reach a point where he can't do tshuva. Can't do tshuva anymore. How is that possible? The answer is that as long as there is an element of rationality left in the soul, so the soul can withdraw at certain times, and it's possible for the soul to remove itself from that which has attached itself to it. You see, through knowledge. But once the soul has become identified with those emotions, and there is no knowledge at all operating, or that can operate against these emotions, then it's impossible. There's no way it could change from that point on. That's a good example. Dharmala. Right. You see? There's no factor, there's no element left that could change the soul. The only element is knowledge. Now, a person has a little bit of knowledge, he can make a little bit of headway, and then he keeps on making, and every time he makes a gain, with knowledge, the gain is permanent. That's one thing, one advantage of knowledge, the gain is permanent. Now, since the gain is permanent, so then he could keep on adding, and once he adds, the knowledge gains more control, and there's more of the soul partakes of knowledge. Now, since more of the soul, he changes the person as the knowledge. Now, once he gains that knowledge, what's going to take it away? So it's a permanent change. Now, once he gains more knowledge, then the soul partakes of knowledge to a greater degree. Once it partakes of knowledge to a greater degree, the next stride is even bigger. Because now, it strides along with more knowledge. So the soul can really keep on making gains. See? Understand, you see, when a person, when we say, for instance, in Yadas, that the sichlius is the essence of the soul, it doesn't mean literally the part of the mind that thinks. That's not what is meant by mind. It's not what is meant by mind. What is meant by mind is insofar as the soul partakes of mind. See, the soul partakes of mind. See, and I'll prove it to you, because the Rambam says in the Mora, the Rambam says that the intellectual perfection is the greatest. It's greater than the perfection of the Midos, and it's greater than even greater than the perfection of the Midos, certainly greater than the perfection of the body, and which is certainly greater than the perfection of one's estate. It's the lowest perfection. Now, the Rambam at the end of the Mora says that the person who is really on the highest level does loves Chesed. Chesed is a Midas. The answer is, and the Rambam, when the Rambam mentions the fourth perfection of the mind, he says, you should involve yourself in this perfection, he says, because this really is yours. He keeps on saying that. I don't know if you ever saw that part. This really is yours. What do you mean, this really is yours? What does it mean, yours? You see? Yours mean, when he says this is yours, he doesn't mean knowledge, perfection of the apparatus of the mind. He's not referring that to that. What he's referring to is perfection of the soul insofar as it partakes of knowledge. Because that really is what the essence of the person is. Because that is the prime mover of the person. See? So that if a person partakes of knowledge, he really gains. Because when he partakes of knowledge, then his prime mover is in order. That really is a gain. Whereas if a person just perfects his emotions, while it is a gain insofar as it permits him to perfect his intellect, it's not a gain per se. See, it's not him per se. Him per se means this is really what really is the basic prime mover, is the most correct prime mover, is the knowledge. What he means is that the person should perfect himself in knowledge. He doesn't mean, like I said, the apparatus, the mental apparatus, that he should be able to calculate properly, or even to think properly. What he's referring to is the soul's relationship to knowledge. That's what he means. In Rambam, unfortunately, when you read the ancients, what happens is that you project your own terminology onto what they mean by certain words, which is a very leads to many errors. Leads to many errors. Yadus maintains is a very simple thing: that when is the person really in the most favorable position? When can he be happiest? And when is he in the best position? When his soul partakes of mind, when his soul partakes of knowledge. That's the prime mover. Because you see, when a person has knowledge, and he'll see why he does a crazy thing, and he understands it, he'll never do it again. Why? Because the knowledge knowledge dictates that the that this is what it should do. So you see that the prime mover really, everybody agrees that the most basic prime mover has to be knowledge. That really is the soul. So that's the you. That's the you. So the ultimate you really is, there is, the you is really what the prime mover is. But the ultimate you is where the prime mover is identified with the knowledge, partakes of the knowledge.
Okay.
This is really in line with what many Chachamim mention, that the Olam Haba is not an onish, that God punishes a person and says, okay, now you're not going to have Olam Haba, because you were bad. That's an infantile concept. Well, I'll give you a present. Because you were so good, I'm going to give you a present for being so good during your lifetime. That's not true. The Rambam speaks a lot about that. He says, that's absurd, because that would be saying that Torah really isn't the best thing, because God's going to give you something else in place of Torah. So this isn't really the ultimate. See? But Olam Haba is a natural thing. Rambam says, natural thing. Natural thing that a person whose soul partakes of knowledge, who has perfected his soul to that point where it partakes of knowledge, you see, then he has a place in Olam Haba. Because that which is eternal is only the concepts. The ideas, the chachma is eternal, and a person is eternal insofar as he partakes of that. So that's why his soul is eternalized. However, the soul whose prime mover is taiva, partaking of taiva, that's his essence, so simply he can't exist over there because it just doesn't exist anymore. Taiva is no material thing, so it doesn't exist. See? Right. Hayav adam lizoher b'mezuzah, mibnei shehi chova sakol tamid, Rama says. V'chol zman sheyichnas v'yetzei, every time man goes into his house and out of his house, yifga b'yichur Hashem, shmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'yizkor ahavaso. I'll think of yichur Hashem, that God is a source behind every phenomena that we see. The Yizkor Avaso, and I'll remember the Avas Hashem. The Yor Mishnaso, the Shigyosov, Bahavle Azman, Ushkiyosov, Bahavle Azman, and he'll awaken from his sleep and from his mistaken involvement in the nonsensical things of life. The Yeda, the only thing that's eternal is Yediyas Sur Olam. Miyad Uchozel Adaito. He goes back to his mind. What does it mean? It means he comes under the sway of the of knowledge. The soul partakes of knowledge. V'holech b'darkei meisharim. See? That's why the Rambam said before, famous Rambam, that's in Perek, the end of Perek Vav. Set. In Perek Hey, Halacha Del, the Rambam was so upset that he says that Minik Pasha Shekosalam ala mezuzah mebuchutz keneged revach shebein pasha lepasha shedai shin dalad yud vein bazeh hefzeh lefish yom mebuchutz. He says, Aval elu shekosu mebifnim, those people who write inside, shmos hamalachim, o shemos hakadoshim, o pasuk o chasamos, Harehim b'chlal mi she'ein lohem chelek l'olam haba.
Rambam says.
Who write the names of malachim inside of mezuzah. They have no chelek l'olam haba.
Why do they do that?
They just forfeited the mitzvah of mezuzah. So he says, serious. She'elo atipshim, he says. She'elo atipshim lo dai lohem she'bitlu ha-mitzvah. Not enough to involve the mitzvah. For that you don't lose l'olam haba. Ela she'osu mitzvah gedola. They took a great mitzvah. She'hi yichur Hashem shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Va'avoso, va'avodoso, because that's really the concept of mezuzah, those ideas of what's written in the mezuzah, and they made a ki'ilu hukmiya shalanoyas atzma, as if it's something for their own benefit, for their own enjoyment. Kemo she'ola alibom ha'sochol, like they thought in their foolish hearts, she'zeo dover ha'mahane b'hav le'ola, they thought that this is going to help them in terms of their nonsensical, irrational quests, you see. Ram says, person that does, he says, that means a person that has done that has forfeited the whole concept of Yadas, the whole basis of Yadas. Because to him, what's his essence? His essence is his physical and nonsensical personal strivings and involvements. So he's forfeited the whole mitzvah. So how can he have a part in the Olam Haba? There's no way in the Lichok Olam Haba. That's why the Rambam says that. Why is Rambam so strict on a person? Because he's taken the ultimate and he's reduced it to a means to his physical. Can't have a Olam Haba. It's impossible. That's the Rambam. Hilchos Mezuzah. Now, what does it mean, Kedoshim, to you?
Kedoshim to you? Ki Kodosh, Ani Hashem Elokechem.
What does it mean, Kodosh Ani Hashem Elokechem? What's the answer?
The answer is, Rashi says, that's what Rashi says. Evepushim in Arayisim in Avera. What does it mean? It means that the person's prime mover should not be Arayis. That's why Rashi mentions Avera. Avera means that the Pushim in Arayis alone, if Rashi would have said, it meant physically he doesn't violate. But Minavera means from the desire. Which means to say that the prime mover should be a different one. His prime mover should be Chachma. There's a different functioning soul. The person that lives according to Yadis, his soul functions in a totally different way. The prime mover is Chachma. The Taiva, yeah, he can sense Taiva. But when he senses a Taiva, it has to go through a certain machine first. And the mind thinks about it. There's a gap there. The taiva doesn't. There is no direct flow from the desire to the prime mover of the soul, to the soul. See, it doesn't work that way. The taiva may attract him. You see, the taiva may attract him. He's not a malach. He's only a human being. Taiva will attract him. No question about it. But once it does, the mind works, and the mind decides whether or not this taiva is something you should partake of. Or not, you see? So that's a different mind, a totally different mental apparatus. It's a different soul. It's a different soul. That's Kedushin to you. That's the mitzvah Kedushin to you.
That's why you know, say
Kedushin. Rashi says Arias. That's why Rashi says Arias. Because Arias is the biggest type of, that's the biggest force, the greatest attraction. Navi always equates Arias. I mean, Shlaim HaMelech and Kicholas Avon, all these. Arias is the biggest taiva.
But if
Kedusha is a taiva, that's Achila. Kedusha means Kedusha. The Rambam says Kedusha is Achila, and it's Arias. Yisur Achila and Yisur Bia. Question is, which is as far as the it's a positive thing? Kedoshim to you. What does it mean? Yeah, what does it mean? Kikadosh Ani Hashem Elokechem. What does it mean? Kikadosh Ani Hashem Elokechem. What does it mean? It means a person has the ability in his way to be medama lakadosh baruch hu. That's the principle of mahu afata. Mahu afata. What does it mean? Mahu afata means a person can partake in a certain, in a human sense, limited human sense, he can partake of the in his own frame. You see, he could imitate God. Right, which means that he can raise his nature to the point where it is close in a sense to God's nature. That's in Kikadosh Ani Hashem Elokecha, because of course the Kadosh Baruch Hu is the source of all chachma, and there is no emotion. God doesn't have any emotion. God is a source of, we can't even define his essence. But he's the source of all chachma. And so far as God is the source of all chachma, man, when he becomes kadosh, you see, when he becomes kadosh, when is the prime mover of his soul is chachma, he's likened to God. He's likened to God. That's the pshat. That's the pshat. Kedoshim to you, ki kadosh nir Hashem Elokecha. Kadosh ani. Hashem, k'shem shani kadosh, kach atem to you kadoshim. K'shem shani parosh, kach atem to you parishim. That's ma'ani afata. That's what it means. See? Because God's nature is far removed, is the furthest removed from taiva, because of his nature. Man has his nature is that he is susceptible to taiva. But insofar as he removes himself from taiva, he is like, becomes likened to kadosh baruch hu. Okay? Well, if he daiti, remember? Is a person who involves himself in the taiva. There's only one problem with that. The problem is that when a person involves himself in taivas, there's another part of his soul that objects and sees problems. And that is the mind. Now, in order to take care of that problem, the drink comes into the picture. And then he can be totally, without any objections, without any guilt, or without any conscience, he can be totally involved in the taiva. See, that is the man's essence. That's what the Ramban says, that a person could be people in the world, but those are Hollywood people that are having these parties, and yet everybody identifies with them, is attracted to it. Why? Because that's the old situation where the person's mind, person's taivas, can overpower the mind. I mean, it has overpowered the mind. I would be different if I was there. See? The same thing. I would be different. So, the mind can be fooled, can be overpowered by the taiva, and it can block out the whole reality. So therefore they want to observe this scene, because they really believe that really is the supreme satisfaction. But nevertheless, they have to block out certain reality. At any rate, so if you would show those people, that they really are miserable, which I don't think will be too difficult to show them, actually. But if you show them there's a better way to live, that they can really have a greater satisfaction, and also you give them the knowledge as to why they're stuck in this, see, then definitely, I mean, unless the person is crazy, he would change, because every person wants the good for what is good for themselves. It's the scene. Ramban completes the scene with one very nice sentence. Ramban is depicting what the taiva scene is, and that's Ramban, with his great mind, can do it the best. He adds one more thing. He says, "V'yedaber kirtzono b'chol hanavolos shlohuzker ises ebetara." He says, and he can verbalize all types of profanities. What's up, shot? What's up, shot? He literally, nivel peh, he could say anything he wants. See? Say anything he wants. Why does that round off the scene, actually? Because a person, by nature, is not capable of using all his energy for physical tivus. That only an animal could do. So a person has to be able to, has to get rid of a lot of tivus through a sublimated form, through speech. See? So therefore, if he only involved himself in the physical taivas, even though he dulled his mind, he wouldn't have guilt with regard to the physical taivas, but he'd still be left unsatisfied. There's one area that fills that gap. What is that area? Dibor. That's the area of Dibor. So that rounds off the taiva scene. Inherently is frustrating. Call out Dvarim Yegeim. That's right. About it, that even then he could never satisfy all his taivas. Yeah, novel Bereshis HaTorah. Okay. Achrei shepardo isurim she'asar son legamri v'tziva bedavar klali sheniyah prushim min amosros v'yimat b'mishgal. They shouldn't have too much intercourse. They only should do according to the halacha. They should only drink a little bit. V'chein yafresh atzma min atoma, af pish lo huzharnu mimena, b'tara, kinyan shehizkiru, big day amar, it's medris lepershim. V'kimosh nikra nazir kodesh, b'shomar mitumas amaz, gam kain. V'gam yishma piv v'l'shenai, meiz goel, b'riboy ha'achila ha'gasa, v'min ha'dibor ha'nimas, kinyan shehizkar kosov, V'chol peh, dover nevola, v'yekanesh atzma b'zeh, ad sheyegi l'prishis, k'ma shamar Rabbi Chiyah, sh'lo soch sicho b'teila miyomav. Be'elu k'yetze b'hen bo ha-mitzvah zos ha-klolis. Acharei sh'porat kol ha-vera sh'en asuris l'gamri, ad sheyekanesh b'chlal zos ha-zos ha-tzavroa, and ha-kiyus b'yoda v'gufo, k'ma shamar v'skadishtem me'el ha-mayim rishonu, v'yisim g'doshim me'el ha-mayim achronim, ki kadosh zeh shem an-orev. Ki af apishe lo mitzvah midivrayim, ikar kosov v'kiyotzei bozeh, yazir, sh'niye nekiyim u'tahorim u'prushim, me'amon b'nei adam, she'em melach lachim atzman b'moisreis u'b'kiurim. Interesting thing, huh? Aras HaKadosh. And many Chazal lived on Taras HaKadosh. They were Nizah from Tumah also. Yeah, and this is from Tamar also. Nikias, then he mentions Nikias. So he mentions Nikias. What is the concept of being a Nizar me Tamar? Al Taras HaKadosh? So that concept really the Rambam mentions. The Rambam says. I think it's one of the Rambam says, any Hilchos Mikvois, he says that the end of Hilchos Mikvois, that the Dover Goli Dusha Tumais Vatiris Nizirus Akasavim, means that it's something that separates a person from something which is not good. The Einon Midvarim Shadaita Shel Odom Machra Asa. It's not something which he says. In other words, it's a halacha. It's not something which is evil per se, but it's a chok. It's a chok. The pasuk didn't just choose this. Even though it's exeris akasav, the pasuk didn't just choose this thing haphazardly. But there's a parallelism between the tumas akasav and between tumas anafashas. That's what the Rambam says. You see. He says, "Kacha machamen liba latar nafshe mitumas anafasha shem machshavas olam v'deis arois." What the tumas anafasha is machshavas olam v'deis arois. Kivan shehiskin beliba lifresh melos anaitzos vehevi nafshe b'mehadas astar. So then he said, the mind is the mehadas. So a person can, the real tara occurs through mehadas. So what does the Rama mean? Remez yesh bedavar. I mean, if it's exeris akasav, so it's exeris akasav. What does it mean? Remez yesh bedavar. So what he means is that. That there is a kiyum in all the hilchas tumas v'tayreis, there is a kiyum of a tayras alev, that a person that should be in a person's mind should really relate that tahira to tayras machshava. That's what the Ram means. Is a kiyum, even though that it's exeris akasav in the halachic structure, it's exeris akasav, but really there's a kiyum of Taras Alev with regard to Tumah V'Taira. Interesting thing. So that's why the Ramban says, it says Chazal lived al Taras HaKadosh. Says they were, because they should be cognizant and aware, this parallelism makes a person aware of the real Taira. You see? Taira of the soul, right. That's what it is. That's why he mentions the Nikias. He says the same thing with the Nikias be Yadav Vagufo. Kamosh Yomer is Kadishta Melamayim Rishonim, Yisim Kadosh Melamayim Achronim, Kikadosh Zashem and Orev. So the thing is that all these things, Nikiyim Utahorim Prushim, it means that there's a parallelism between the physical Nikias and between the. It reflects the real Nikias. Tum of Atah reflects the real Nikias. Keeps you away from an evil per se. Sometimes the Torah sets up a whole elaborate system because there is a parallel in the human mind between the two. It works through the method of parallelism. That's the. It has a symbolic representation in the human mind. It's a different structure, different way a mitzvah is formulated. The mitzvah is formulated as exeris akasav. If the mitzvah is that you should keep away from evil per se, a person shouldn't do ritzicha, so there the mitzvah is formulated as directly keeping away from the evil. Well, it's not directly keep away from evil. It's a system which has gzeres akasav, we don't know why exactly precisely it was structured that way, but it's structured that way by God because that's the way that the best way for most people in the long run, for deridaris. So it's structured that way. Not only God's chachma can structure. But the essential parallelism is, the essential purpose is the parallel is drawn between this in the human mind and another aspect, which is the real Torah. It's supposed to reflect the real Torah. That's what the Ramban says. See? Okay. What's the difference really between the Ramban and between Rashi?
Yeah.
Ramban, he says, they should, Achi Agia, the Kanashasam was Achi Agia, the precious. It's a level, huh? So the thing is, so what is the according to the Ramban, what is the mitzvah really according to Ramban? Perfection, right? That's right. The Torah, there's a halachic system in which the Torah cannot legislate perfection, but nevertheless, the kedoshim tiyu is really the purpose of kol Torah kula.
That's the purpose of Kol Tarkova. It's not a halacha. It's a halachic system. You can't legislate perfection. Halacha has to be equal for everybody. But there is a mitzvah midaraisa that the person should be involved in perfection. It's not counting a minyan of mitzvahs. So you're not counting a minyan of mitzvahs. But it's the purpose. It's the purpose of Kol HaTarakula. It's really the complement of Kol HaTarakula. Kedoshim Tiyu is the complement of Kol HaTarakula.
Where is
Rashi? Lo Mitzvah. That's the way it is according to the Ramban. See? Whereas according to Rashi, it's not the complement of Kol HaTarakula, Kedoshim Tiyu. Kedoshim Tiyu is merely a certain structure of the mind. Every Jew must have a certain structure. His mind must have a certain basic structure, and this is the Purshim and Arayas. So that's according to Rashi. According to Rashi, it's not perfection. It's relating to the way his soul is structured. The basic structure of his soul must be of a certain nature. But at different levels, that's a perfection. That's not, Rashi doesn't talk about perfection. Rashi just talks about the way it should be structured. Certain structures, certain qualitative differentiation between a person who is shatuf b'taiva, how his soul relates to the taivas, and how a person who is a Yisrael relates to it. It's a different relationship. That's the way it is according to Rashi. See? But according to the perfection, once you have that structure, perfection is different degrees. But according to the Ramban, it's perfection per se that the mitzvah is.
It's like a precondition.
It's the mitzvah. Kedoshim Tiyu means strive for perfection. Striving for perfection, that's Kedoshim Tiyu. Okay. Yeah. That's a good thing. That's what Chayit in Alibo. That a person should know. The Gemara says, the Pasuk says, Tov lechaz al beisa avo, mi lechaz al beisa mishta. It's better for a person to go to the house of a mourner than to go to a party. Why? She says, "Vachayit in elibo." The pasuk says, "Chayit in elibo." That the living should contemplate. What does it mean they should contemplate? So the Chazal say, "They sheyeda the cover yigburu vehesper yisvedu." Should know this is going to happen to me one day also.
The Rambam
has a
becher.
What? That's it. That's something else. This is different. There's a person going to a funeral. To go to funerals, you can't. One second. I'm not talking about an oval. The person going to a funeral is a kiyam. Tov lach le beisa, lach le lach le beisa mishta. Why? So the thing is that the Torah looks at death in two ways. On the one hand, it's good for a person to know that his existence is temporary. On the other hand, there's a danger that a person, with regard to the mace, will consider the mace somehow or other to be. To still exist. See, to deny the Misa. You know what I mean? You're in cover to Mace. So who are you giving cover to? You're giving cover to the Mace. So that's the Mace. I mean, don't we believe the soul is separate? It's just a physical body? You know what I mean? But on the other hand, if you don't have cover to Mace, so then you don't recognize a Misa altogether. A person will deny the fact that he dies. So there should be... You see, so really the mace is an object that has you have an ambivalent relationship to. On the one hand, you're supposed to identify with the fact that you too will die one day. You see, but on the other hand, it can't be a full identification, because if there's a full identification, so then you consider him to really still exist. Yeah, and if there's no way, if you don't give any cover to his remnants, so then there's no recognition of the fact that you're going to die. See, that's why Allah takes the middle course. Allah takes the middle course that there's
recognition.
Yeah, there's no such thing as viewing the mace or things like that, because viewing the mace would imply that this is him, that he's still alive. See?
The
denial of the fact that he's gone, that it's not really him. On the other hand, if you don't really, mace altogether. You just say there's remnants in the, that's not him at all, and just throw it away. So then there's no, that is, then there's no identification whatsoever with him, so then you don't consider that it's going to happen to you. See? So it has to be in between. You put him in the ground, shows that this is only the remnants. But the way you put him in the ground, is he covered the way he's on, it shows that the person that's ki adam halacha beis alama, that the person will die. Right. A person shouldn't have in mind that the body is really the mace. It's just because it's that which was associated with the, it's an via association. By association, right, like Tashmishi Kedusha. Right. Body was satisfied. It caused the person to mourn. Now, Lifnei Hashem is really where all the energies are directed towards God. So there's no such thing. There's no such phenomena. There's no such phenomena. Right. That's right.
There's an interesting, psukim in Kehelas. Kehelas Yiralef. Yibbeis. Zechoras bor echel b'meibuchu rasecho arashe lo yavo yimei arov yigiyu shem shetam en li v'em chechetz. Then you have Achelo Techshach HaShemesh V'Or V'Yareach V'Kochovim V'Shofu V'Avim V'Avim Achar Agoshim V'Yom Sh'Yezu Shomer Abayis V'Zafsu Anshe Achoyel L'Botlu Atochanos K'Mietu V'Choshku V'Aroos Barubos V'Sugud L'Asayim B'Shuk B'Shfal Kol Atachano V'Yokum Kol Atzipor V'Yishachu Kol Benos Ashir Gam Yigavo Yiru V'Chaschatim B'Derach V'Yonis HaShoka V'Yistab L'Achoga V'Sofer Aviyono K'Yol L'Chodom Abayis Aloma V'Sofer V'Ashuk HaSoftim Interesting few psukim over here. English translation is like this. Before the sun, remember then the Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near when you shall say, I have no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain, and the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look out shall be darkened in the windows, and the doors shall be shut in the street, when the sound of the grinding is low, and one shall start up at the voice of a bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. Also when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and terror shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall blossom, and the grasshopper shall drag itself along, and the caper berry shall fail. Because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. Before the silver cord is snapped asunder, and the golden bowl is shattered, and the pitcher is broken at the fountain, and the wheel falleth shattered into the pit. And the dust returneth to the earth as it was, and the spirit returneth unto God who gave it. What is the meaning of all this? You take a look at the Mefarshim, and the Mefarshim say that all these things refer to the parts of the human body. To the parts of the human body. Ad shelo techshach haShemesh amru rabbeinu Rashi zu padachas shimeir matzavas bottom bochor kishemaskenas imalas kmat and veinu matzavas. The forehead is shiny when he's young, and then when he gets old, he gets wrinkled. The or is zeachotem vayareach, that's the neshama shemeir aladam akochavim el lasasos, the jaws, the shavuav machar goshem. Rashi says. Yom Sheyazu Shomer Abayis. What Shomer Abayis? Those are, that's the rib cage, and the Vesavsu Anshe Achoyel. What are the Anshe Achoyel? Rashi says those are the thighs, that the whole body depends on them. Ubatlo Atochanos, that's the Shinayim, that's the teeth. Kimietu, of course, when a person gets old, most of his teeth fall out. And what are the Ros Barubos? They become dark. That's the eyes that look through the windows. And etc. All these things that the that they are depicted over here. Then all these things are the actually what they call a kesef. The silver thread means the chut hashedra, spinal column. And Rashi explains all these. It's the shavar kara lamabua. That's the stomach. And when he dies, it's split open. It venosa galgal abor, that's galgal ayin b'sof gumo. All these things that the eye recedes, it shrinks into the cavity of the skull. What are all these? Why all these? What kind of? Why did they write all these and show them? The answer is because a person can't truly realize his, the situation of his death. So it had to be given derech mashal. Derech mashal. And this shows you, this really depicts man's duality towards Misa. That he can't fully realize his Yom HaMisa. It's prevented from fully realizing Yom HaMisa. And the only way it could be portrayed to him is through Mashalom. Okay.